This is Tracy.
And this is Sheila, and we are Zwei Fat Chicks. And this episode is recording at William's Coffee Pub in Whitby, and is going to be about a subject near and dear to our hearts.
Cheese! Thank you, Wallace.
We can call this the Cheese Stands Alone episode.
Definitely. This is a re-record. We've already done this once, and we weren't happy with it, so this is take two.
How cheesy.
Cheese. So, where do you want to start?
Well, I guess we could start with the different categories of cheese.
Okay.
There's, like, hard, semi-hard, semi-soft, all kinds of weird adjectives that are describing cheese, but none of them are officiated.
It varies by country to country.
I propose that we look at the two things that matter about food, taste and texture.
Yep.
Taste, we can categorize very simply into two different ones, and that would be, Tracy?
Young and old.
And what's the young taste like?
Cheesy.
And...
cheesy?
Mild.
Mild. Yes, it's mild, creamy, cheesy, very inoffensive. It can be pushed up with supporting cast members, but usually the cheese itself, without anything else added into it, can be very inoffensive.
And the old style cheeses?
In your face.
Sharp.
Sharp, yes. Hardcore.
Very flavorful.
Yes. Now...
because the more cheese ages, the more flavor it gets.
Exactly.
Now, I can't really even think of any exceptions to that, to be honest. Unless you have, like, adjuncts in it, like peppers or something that pushes the flavor up.
Sheila has a more developed palate than me, so she'll give you more detail about what the cheeses actually taste like. I don't pick out as many flavors as she does. I need more practice.
Well, it just means eating more cheese.
Exactly, because you can develop your palate. You just have to eat more and pay attention to what you're eating instead of just shoveling it in sometimes, which is what I do. So.
And just think about the flavors that you're getting.
Yes.
Now, for the texture thing, we can go ahead and use hard, soft, and spreadable.
Yes.
So hard cheeses would be anything that you would need a knife to cut, mm-hmm. like cheddar, parmesan, you know, use like a grater for that.
A sharp knife.
Yeah. The soft cheeses would be brie, camemberts, even almost like Swisses to an extent.
I would still put Swiss in the hard category because they're not quite that soft. You'd have to really muscle through with a butter knife. But I would also, even though technically official cheese categorization puts this cheese in a spreadable category, mozzarella, for our purposes, would go in the soft category.
Yeah.
Because it's not a hard cheese, really, if you get fresh mozzarella.
Now, you can tear it apart.
Yeah.
The fresh mozzarella stuff. You don't even need a knife for it,
exactly.
Really.
Exactly. And if you get, you know, Kraft brick of mozzarella, then it's... not quite the same, but the fresh stuff you get in the deli with the oils.
We'll call it the authentic or artisanal or...
yes, those would go into the soft category as well.
Yeah.
Now, Wensleydale, that's kind of crumbly.
It's very crumbly.
But even crumbly cheeses I would put in the soft category.
Yeah, I would totally put blue cheese in the soft category. Mm-hmm. Anything that, like, leaves a smear, if you try and pick it up and it crumbles apart and it smears all over your fingers, mm-hmm. I'd put that in the soft category.
In fact, instead of saying it can be spread with a knife or cut with a dull knife, we should probably say it can be spread on something.
Yeah.
That might be a good categorization. I don't know. We'll go with a dull knife. There we go. We're thinking out loud at this point because it's such a vast
realm. Well, there's so many different textures mm-hmm. to cheese.
It's
infinite. And then I was thinking for the spreadable stuff, it would be
ricotta,
feta.
That stuff that you're supposed to use for cannoli.
Mascarpone,
things like that. And there's a bunch of small artisanal cheese mm-hmm. from mostly Italy, I want to say. But there's a lot of small, fresh cheeses like that that are the scoopable, spreadable kind of things. You said hard, soft, spreadable. So
right.
I got the two categories mixed up. I'm sorry. That's why you looked at me like I'd lost my mind.
That's okay.
So scratch what I said about it being able to be spread. You're right, it has to be cut with a butter knife. But Wensleydale, I think I would put into the soft category, not the spreadable category, because it crumbles.
Let's see. So there's different flavors in cheese. Pretty much any cheese you're going to have is going to have a tanginess to it. And that's because of the rennet that's used to make it.
Yes.
Because you have to curdle milk first before you can make it. And that can be done in a variety of ways.
And there's also acid added besides the rennet. And sometimes that brings other flavors in. Now, we had a lot of cheese earlier today in preparation to get pumped up for this. And one of the cheeses we had was a goat cheese.
It was goat's milk cheese encrusted in peppercorns.
Mm-hmm. And it was one of the spreadable cheeses. Mm-hmm. And that's a good good example of how a cheese can be of one variety, but it can hit all three categories. Because you can have a hard goat cheese.
Yeah.
Because there's like goat cheese cheddars.
Yeah.
You can have a soft goat cheese, which we've had before. The one with the fruit around it. That's more of a soft one than a spreadable one.
Yeah.
And then you can have the one we had today, which was almost like a cream cheese. It was so soft and spreadable. But that one had flavor notes that were very tangy. And we both figured that they added something citrus into it.
Yeah, I identified it as being like a citrus flavor.
I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, it tastes like tasty as I ate half of it.
Nom. Then there's a cheese flavor. Mm-hmm. You know, like cheddar has like a cheese flavor. You can't really compare it to anything else because nothing else tastes like it.
Exactly. You know? And just like Swiss doesn't really taste like anything else, but it definitely doesn't taste like cheddar, but it tastes like cheese.
Yeah.
So you can almost use Swiss and cheddar to start to define other cheeses and their flavors if you're like me and you can't pick out things like hints of almond and bouquets of nuts and whatever in it.
No. I just pictured somebody giving somebody a cone filled with nuts and them going, oh, thank you, you're so thoughtful.
That would be awesome, because usually nuts that come in cones are those, like, honey roasted ones. Awesome ones. Yes. I would totally take that and say, oh, you're so thoughtful. So, I haven't seen those since, like, Cabela's. Yeah. So, those are so good. Back to cheese, though. So, as you can see, breaking it down into categories is very difficult just because it's almost infinite.
Yeah. As many different regions in the world as there are different varieties of cheese. I mean, if you go to Italy, even if you just look at the language people speak, they'll speak one dialect on one side of the mountain. If you go to the other side of the mountain, they speak it slightly differently.
And on both sides of the mountain, they make different kinds of cheese.
Yeah.
And they may be drastically different. They may have a slight twist or two to the ingredients. So just some guidelines so you can navigate a cheese counter and feel a little more comfortable with it in case you're scared of it. Because the cheese world is full of food snobs. Just like wine is full of wine snobs, cheese is full of cheese snobs. Sheila broke it down in the beginning, young and old. Old is going to have a sharper taste, young will have a milder taste. That's all you need to know. Yeah. If you need to know the texture, squeeze it. They may look at you funny. They may ask you to leave, but squeeze it.
Don't be too rough with it.
Yes. Yeah,
but just give it a little squeeze.
you don't test your manly grip with it.
Well, a lot of times they'll give a description of it. Mm-hmm. They'll say semi-soft or hard cheese. Mm-hmm.
And semi-soft, for our purposes, would be that soft category we described.
Yeah, it would be the Brie's, the Camemberts. Mm-hmm.
The oozy cheeses.
The oozy cheeses that are delicious and awesome.
A lot of goat cheeses fall into that, too. Mm-hmm. Like we said earlier with the delicious goat peppercorn cheese I can't stop thinking about now. Oh my god, it was so good.
So another flavor note for you would be the Camemberts and Brie's. Mm. They definitely have a slight mushroom aftertaste in a really good way. And that has to do with the fungus that grows on the outside of it. That really white, thin, powdery layer that's so delicious.
It is fantastic. And that's supposed to be the best part of the cheese.
Yeah. There was that one bishop that gave Charlemagne what for yes. cutting it off and throwing it to his dogs.
He's like, what are you doing? That's the best part of the cheese. It's an old Brie legend, so to speak. So, now, if you aren't fond of the mushroom taste, I have to admit, it took me a little while to get used to it. You can just kind of scoop into it and eat the inside
brie. And still appreciate
it. And it doesn't have that taste. You only get that taste if you eat the rind. Once I got used to the taste, I started to fight Sheila for the rind. But it used to be
all me.
Yes. Now, for people who have listened to the Last Chance to Eat episode, you'll also know a little trivia fact about some of the softer cheeses, like brie, that the bigger the wheel, supposedly, the better the flavor will be, because that...
The thinner the rind.
The thinner the rind.
For more cheese on the inside.
It's the correct ratio.
A good ratio.
So the little tiny wheels of brie, as cute as they are, and as hard as it is for me to resist them, you're really better
they
off
are adorable.
If the cheese counter is just cut a giant wheel of brie to go get a wedge instead if you're going to eat it right away.
Yeah.
Now, if you're not going to eat it right away, I would recommend actually getting the little wheel just because it's going to keep a little bit longer because it's not cut. Once you cut it, that's a little bit of a cheesy time bomb on the brie stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And just like beer, cheese has its own microbial thing going on. So as long as the microbes that are supposed to be there are still in charge and all their bases belong to them, you're okay. If something else gets in and all their base belong to them and they're in there killing your dudes, don't eat it.
Don't eat it. Your cheese has lost the game and you need to reset by going back to the cheese counter and buying something else.
Exactly. Now, if it's a hard cheese, like a cheddar, you can just cut the mold off. That's not a big deal.
Soft cheeses, if you see extra mold growing that shouldn't be there,
all their base belongs to them.
I wouldn't take the chance.
They're in there killing your dudes.
Yeah, just toss it. It's not worth the running into one of those nasty molds that'll kill you dead or something like that. Because you never know when one of those will pop up.
It was a scourge of ancient France. It killed noblemen by the thousands.
Or you start hallucinating that people are witches or there's werewolves or something. Either way, it's not going to be good for you. So
the fungus among us.
Go buy another chunk of brie. Those little wheels are so cute.
They are adorable.
And I actually want to cover however, totally unrelated to back to cheese, and then we'll go back to the categories of the soft cheeses and everything. The tiny little Laughing Cow Baby Bells.
Oh, yeah.
Those are actually pretty good.
Yeah, they are. I mean, for being something that's mass marketed, they're tasty. I mean, I'm not going to deny it.
They're a pretty good cheese, and they're great for people who are traveling or lunches or whatever, because they're self-contained. They're actually made as little miniature wheels of cheese, too.
Yeah.
It's not like a larger piece
gets cut
off.
Mm-hmm. It around it, so it's totally self-contained.
Yes.
That way there's going to be less contamination.
So if you're looking for something for a picnic or to take to the amusement park or do whatever with that day in the cooler, they're not a bad choice. I'd rather get those than string cheese. String cheese isn't as good as it used to be.
No. Well, now a lot of cheddar companies are wise to the Baby Bell phenomenon, mm-hmm. and they've started packaging little tiny self-contained slices of cheddar.
Yes.
That you can buy a whole bag of them.
Yes,
and then throw one or two in your lunch.
Sargento does that now.
Yeah.
I know they
and there's
do for
another
sure.
one, too.
Yeah.
It's like a Canadian cheddar company.
Yeah.
It's like Balderson or something.
Yes. They usually have their cheese at our counter at Sobeys. Not Sobeys, at Loblaws. So.
Yes.
Anyway, back to the Breeze. So,
Breeze are awesome.
Breeze are
awesome.
Don't
be scared.
Don't be scared.
Besides, like so many things in life, people have taken something that has humble beginnings, that's a farmhouse delicacy, mm-hmm. and elevated it up and made it, taken it out of the reach of the people, and there's no reason why everybody can't enjoy it.
Yes.
Besides, look at the guy from Inglourious Basterds, the French farmer at the beginning. He was a pretty tough dude, even though the Nazis eventually broke him down. He was He probably ate a lot of brie.
Yes.
He was no effete shrinking violet. He was a tough old sod.
So what would be the perfect receptacle to eat your cheese on? What conveyance device from your mouth, from the board to your mouth?
Well, a lot of people go with crackers, but personally I think the crackers are too seasoned. I would go with either crusty French or Italian bread.
Or just by itself. If you're eating something that's a hard cheese that you can just lop off and munch it, go for it. But I'm with Sheila. We usually go for a crusty bread because it's tasty and fresh, and I like some of the crackers with it, but I've also had experiences where the crackers overpower the cheese and all you taste is the garlic and chive Triscuit, and there's no cheese left.
I'd die when the one couple that we used to know in West Virginia would pull out all these herbed crackers, and I'm like, but the cheese!
Yes.
I don't want to taste the herbs, I want to eat the cheese. I just want, like, a semi-neutral but somewhat tasty vessel to bring it to my mouth.
Or worse, if there's, like, a sweet cheese or a fruited cheese there, and you have a garlic Triscuit.
Yeah,
sitting there looking
chives,
at it, saying,
like, ew.
Oh, but it's gonna be bad. And extreme flavors go together sometimes,
but sometimes
not always.
Not. That's why there's no such thing as tuna fish ice cream, as far as I know. Although they probably made it on Iron Chef.
I think they did.
Okay, in mass
Sandlin
marketing.
Ice cream, yes. In mass marketing, our palates do not enjoy that. You can use anything, though. If you like the garlic crackers, go for it. If you like the chicken in a basket crackers in your Jarlsberg, have at it. We're not going to stop you. We'll probably try it. Be like, hey, that is pretty good. It's like eating cordon bleu.
Yeah, speaking of Jarlsberg, that's actually an American cheese, I found out.
I feel so betrayed.
I know, because I totally thought it was like being made in some farm in Norway by some descendants of Vikings. And then I found out it's just a Norse recipe made in the good old USA.
But it is my favorite Swiss, so...
It's an amazing Swiss.
It's a
hard nutty,
Swiss.
It's strong. I don't know, it's just so assertive.
Oh, the rind on it is just killer, because it has this tooth-filled rind, this texture that you kind of have to snap through it almost. It's like the
cheese equivalent of a natural
skin sausage. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's so good. I can match Jarlsberg with almost anything.
Yeah.
It's expensive up here, though, unless you can get it in a
big
chunk.
I know, it's weird.
If you can get it at Costco or Sam's Club, it's a lot more affordable. But at the grocery store, I'm even surprised at how much it is now. I guess the grocery store's caught on to the hidden gem of Jarlsberg and price it accordingly now. So where should you buy your cheese, too?
Where should you buy your cheese? At the cheese counter.
Of course.
Of course.
So, when we lived in Morgantown, there was a new Kroger's that opened up. It
oh
was
my
between
God.
The Mile Ground and the hospitals, where the hospitals were in the stadium. And this was a killer Kroger's. It was gorgeous, huge. It was, like, artistically lit.
Yeah, the fruit all looked like still life paintings.
Yes, Sheila wanted to wander around with a sketchbook. It was so pretty in there. And they had the best cheese counter we've ever seen in a grocery store before. So it was actually an island in the middle of the deli area, kind of by where the produce and the deli was. They just had this separate island surrounded by cheese, and the Olive Bar was on it too.
Oh,
and they
the
had
Olive
cheesemongers,
Bar.
Like real people trained to tell you about cheese. They put samples out, and they had it killer selection of different cheeses. And if you were there when they were staffed, they would offer, hey, if you want to take that cheese, but you want a smaller chunk, I can cut it and package it smaller for you.
Right. Or you don't know what this blue tastes like compared to the other blue.
Yes.
I'll let you taste it. No problem at all. They'd unwrap it.
Slice it.
Cut it off and then wrap it back up again, reweigh it, and reprice it.
It was killer. It was the best customer service I've ever seen in a grocery store, period, anyway.
But exactly.
To have that opportunity to walk in and say, oh, I'm torn between these two, and they'd let you take a little chunk of each one and see which one you liked better to take home was great.
Exactly. And one chick we knew at Leanne was actually a cheesemonger, too.
That was a
Giant Eagle.
Yes.
She actually went away on, like, a weekend course or something and, like, learned how to be a cheesemonger.
Well, after that Kroger's opened up, Giant Eagle stepped up their game, too. They didn't have the cheese island of doom, the financial doom that emptied my wallet, but they stepped up their game in their cheese department, and they started getting some different things in, and their people became more knowledgeable about the products, too. So, Morgantown, actually, if you're in the area, check out the Giant Eagle up by University Town Center or the Kroger's out by the Mile Ground, and you probably will be able to get a great selection of cheese if you go during the day, find people who can help you out.
Definitely.
Oh, they used to have those brie in the counter, remember, with all the fruit and everything on them?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the dessert brie.
I would love to try making the baked brie. You found a interesting
a cookbook,
thing about that.
When you do the baked brie, you're supposed to cut the rind off the side, because otherwise it's too much rind, it makes it too mushroomy tasting.
Hmm.
But you leave the rind on the top and the bottom.
Because I've seen ones for, like, mixed fruit and walnuts that you pile on top of it in, like, a crock container and bake it, and it just all melts and gushes together.
Well, they have those little brie baking dishes you can buy at bookstores and home stores that are probably a rip-off, but I'm sure you could use, like, a Corningware dish to do it.
You could probably, they have the jumbo ramekins that you could use easily. No problem.
You can get a little Corningware ramekin or whatever to do it in. You don't have to buy a special one, but if somebody gives you one as a gift, hey, roll with it.
Speaking of which, we're the only people on Earth that actually use the olive oil dipping containers that you keep giving to us.
Yes. Well,
everybody else I know just kind of packs them away in the corner.
And we use them.
We pull them out all the time.
We buy refills.
Especially in the summer.
And what she's talking about is they're these little tiny saucers that you put olive oil and herb mixes in, and you dip bread into it. And
they were all the rage a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. Back in like 2004, 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our favorite meals is just to have olive oil and bread and maybe a cheese with it, mm-hmm. and maybe some meat, like ham or whatever.
Right. Grapes, maybe.
Grapes. You know, it's a nice, simple meal. It's great in the summers when it's hot and crazy out and you just don't feel like cooking. You don't want to heat up the house. And it's a cheap meal, too.
Yeah.
You can get a chunk of cheese for about $5, $6, you know, a bunch of grapes for $1 or $2, a loaf of bread for $1. You already have the olive oil and seasoning at home, and you've got a meal for two and sometimes snacks for later. So everybody else we know is like, yeah, do you want the seasoning? We don't want it. We don't even use it. We're like, okay, we'll take it.
Yeah.
Sure, I'll use that, because I use it like twice a week in the summer. But we do want to try to flex our culinary muscles and make our own seasoning blends.
Because they are a bit on the salty side.
They do add too much salt to them. And they have some other anti-caking agents in there that we probably don't need to eat, to consume. So. And I'd like to try our hands at the Parmesan blends with real Parmesan cheese.
Yes.
Because real Parmesan cheese versus the
stinky foot cheese? That's what my mother calls it. I don't actually think it smells like smelly feet. I'm not sure where she came up with that nickname from.
I don't know either, but every time Sheila would
say
it to me...
It's probably a racial slur.
Oh. Whenever she'd say it to me, I'd sniff the Parmesan cheese and say, I don't smell what you're smelling. I don't get it.
And eventually I just started saying it to see her smell the Parmesan cheese.
Stick my schnoz in the giant container of ground Parmesan. But the ground Parmesan versus the fresh block that you get and you grate yourself,
Let's go with the pros and cons. The green container is cheap, and you could probably buy it at 2 o'clock in the morning at 7-Eleven if you needed to.
And it has a half-life, not a shelf life.
Yes.
Children like it because they recognize it, and that's about it.
Parmigiano Reggiano, Asiago, all those other great hard cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
Delicious. Not that expensive anymore, really.
They can get
readily
moldy.
Available in grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
They can get moldy.
Yeah. They're still expensive, though.
Right.
I mean, that one
the
chunk.
Taste.
The one chunk today at the store I held up, it was, what do you think, a 2-pound chunk?
Yeah.
2-pound chunk of Parmesan. I picked it up and said, this is a commitment. This is like marriage, because you're going to have this for a few years.
Well, and the thing about the wheels of it is, wheels of brie are really short.
Mm-hmm.
They're they're not that tall.
I think the thickest I've seen is 2 inches, really.
Yeah, exactly. And the Parmigiano or, you know, the other ones, they're like, you know, almost half a foot thick. So
it's a commitment.
Even when it's just a slice of it, it's still huge because it's so tall.
And they have to cut it thick enough that it holds structural integrity so you can actually grade it and do things with it.
Yeah, crumbly.
Yes.
Otherwise, it would just fly apart in the bag and you'd be like, here's your bag
of Parmesan.
Parmesan rocks.
But anybody who's been to Olive Gardens has had it. When the fresh cheese guy comes by and grates everything all over your food, that's the fresh stuff. That's the good stuff. I'm not going to say that the stuff in the green container is a bad quality, because it's probably pretty good quality cheese. It's more to do with how it's cut. Shredding Parmesan cheese gives more flavor per little chunk. You can actually taste it, and I think that's what
makes
it better.
Powder.
Yes.
Which just kind of dissolves as soon as it hits the food.
Yes, you don't really taste it. The only time I can
really
taste it is
pizza. Which
makes you
put on 5 times as much as you really need to put on.
And there's empty calories right there, whereas if you get your little block of Asiago out of the cheese and
you can still
run
see
it over
it,
the
so
grater.
You stop putting it on.
Yes.
Because it doesn't go psh as soon as it hits the food.
We recommend the fresh stuff, as you can tell. And you can grate it on the side of your grater, on the tiny side.
Yeah. You could use a planer.
You can use a planer. If you have a little hand grater, you can use that. If you get suckered in one of those kitchen party things, you can buy one of their little round grater things there. Those are pretty good for the Parmesan cheese.
You could even use the Grady if you wanted to.
That's only if you're willing to admit that you ordered a ShamWow off TV from that guy. Or not a ShamWow, the Slap Chop.
The Slap Chop,
yeah. Slap Chop, oh.
Didn't you say your grandmother had, like, an old-school Slap Chop that was, like, a glass jar?
Yes!
With, like,
my
a screw-on lid.
Too.
And then it had, like, the thing that you pushed it, and it had, like, this... It looked like an asterisk of doom.
Yes!
It was, like, a 5-bladed star that just sat there and rocketed up and down in the
and
glass
it would,
jar.
And it would turn as you hit it, just like a Slap Chop. And it was... I remember it being 1960s brown plastic.
Yeah.
You know how things in the 60s, like Tupperware, had...
We had a Kool-Aid jug that was that color.
Color, exactly. It was 1960s Tupperware brown, and it was a glass jar that you drop it was gone. I think they replaced the jar at some point, possibly.
Yeah.
Because it was a fairly universal size, so you could screw it on other things.
Well, and Tupperware did the interchangeable parts thing, too. So.
But it was great for walnuts. That's what she used it for. Whenever she'd make something where she only needed a few walnuts, such as cinnamon buns.
Right.
She liked to put chopped walnuts on her cinnamon buns. She'd whip a handful in there and whack it and dump it out in the jar.
So everyone
unscrew it, and then she put a regular lid on it and put it in the thing. Slap Chop's not Slap Chop's
not innovative. New. Yeah, everyone thinks it's like, oh my god, I've never seen that before.
Just like the Grady's, just like the one from the one kitchen party place. It's vertical instead of the horizontal with the holdy thing on the side.
They probably looked at it and said, how can we make it more ergonomic so that we don't bend the handle when we turn it?
Yeah. Yeah, I get a little over-exuberant with it sometimes, I know.
I keep waiting for it to snap and fly off.
What's that kitchen party thing called?
Oh, I thought you were just deliberately being vague.
No, I can't remember what it's called.
Oh, you're talking about Pampered Chef.
Pampered Chef, that's it. Theirs is actually a pretty good quality. I won't complain about it, but if you get suckered into it, it's usually one of the cheapest things you can buy, so go for it.
Yeah. Despite what Alton Brown says, go for the garlic press as well, because
the metal garlic press
easier.
Is indispensable, and if you get the metal one instead of like one of the cheesy plastic ones and you don't get the garlic stink in it, you can use it for other things like ginger too.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's completely
it
is a multitasker. He just doesn't think so. But he grates his ginger on the side of the grater
planer
where he puts the plastic on it, and that still makes me nervous.
I'm worried I'm gonna get like plastic bits all over the place.
Yeah, I don't need that in my guts. My guts are already tortured enough with all the hot food I eat. But anyway, back to cheese.
So
we've covered
tasting.
Where to buy it, we've covered
where to buy it, what the different kinds are,
what to put it on, how to eat it, tasting.
How to eat it. So if you're going to do a tasting, there's a couple of different recommendations out there. You can go with different themes, like you can go with all cheddars, you can go with all soft cheeses, you could go with cheeses of a different country. Like you could
cheese explosion and just whatever looked good at the grocery store, which would be my theme, because I have no self-control.
Well, I've seen, there's one book that we want to get, and I'll make sure and post it, the name and the ISBN number. And they had the classic English plate, the adventurous English plate, the classic French plate, the adventurous French plate. So that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then what to drink with your cheese. Personally, if you don't know, like we always recommend drink what you like.
Exactly.
And if you want to go out there and take some baby steps out into drink and cheese pairing, I say your first stop should probably be to what grows together goes together. So if you're going to do the classic English plate, maybe get like some nut brown ale, something really delicious. English style ales.
If you can lay hands on some cask conditioned stuff, you'll be even more golden.
Exactly. your favorite bitter,
IPAs,
or something like that.
I think IPAs would go well with the English plate.
You know, if you're going to go with the German cheese platter, check out some nice German beers and maybe a Riesling, you know?
French, is the sky's the limit for a French platter. Really.
Exactly. Same thing with Italian. Throw in the entire season of Sopranos and or the entire Sopranos series and away you go.
Now, if you're still a little hesitant and you want some guidelines, here you go. A basic rule of thumb that shouldn't guide you too far astray, or lead you too far astray, rather, is if it's a hard cheese, which means it's going to have a mature flavor because it's older, go with a darker, more robust wine. If it's a softer cheese, which means it has a milder flavor, possibly a hint of sweetness to it, you want to go with a lighter wine or a sweeter wine. You can serve a dessert wine, but be aware that the sweetness of the wine might not pair with the cheeses like you want. For instance, if you put out blue cheese, I don't know if ice wine would go with that.
But I actually saw in the Wine Spectator magazine that I kept, this all cheese, there was like a funky blue cheese plate paired with a dessert wine. It wasn't quite ice wine.
Yeah.
But they paired the blue cheeses with like some dried figs and some walnuts.
I guess it would be the chocolate and beer concept.
Yeah, exactly.
The same thing. You don't think they go together, but they go together well. Okay, I stand corrected. Go for it. Break out the ice wine and blue cheese.
Pretty much. I mean, check it out.
We should talk about the other fungal cheeses too. How do they get the fungus in blue cheese? You probably know.
Oh.
I don't.
Oh, sure. No problem. Okay, so basically when you're going to make any hard cheese, what they do is they curdle the milk using rennet, and then they take all the curds that get separated from the whey, they wash them off, they cut them up into fairly uniform sizes, they sprinkle some salt on it, and they start pressing them. And depending on how long they press it for, depends on how firm the cheese is going to end up being. So once they've got it to the texture that they want it, and blue cheeses tend to be a little bit more crumbly, so they
softer and crumblier, yes.
Yeah, they probably go about midway for that. They take really, really hot, stamps with needles in them, and they stamp the cheese with it. And it, like,
I know why you like blue cheese now. It's a tattooed cheese.
That must be it.
That must be why you're so fond of it.
It's got some ritual scarification going on. Some branding.
Anyway, continue.
So they stamp it with these hot needles, which puts a bunch of holes in it that are totally clean. And then they go by with another stamp, and they inoculate it.
Okay. So it's literally like doing a stump with mushrooms.
Yes.
It's just
exactly
a lot
like
more
that.
Sterile instead of being, you know, out in the woods where you drill a bunch of holes in a stump and you fill it with little mushroom plugs. Okay.
Exactly. So usually whenever you break open a blue cheese, you can sometimes see the perfect lines of where they melted some holes into the cheese.
Okay.
And then inoculated it with whatever one that they use.
For some reason, I thought they did it like a chocolate swirl cake.
Like stir the bacteria into
yes,
it?
And you run the fork through it and get the little swirls of bacteria. I didn't know. That's pretty high tech.
Well, I guess mold, not bacteria, but
mold, yes. But that's what makes blue cheese taste funky. That any of the funky cheeses, you can attribute
like
the funk to the molds that are in it. And these are good molds, not bad molds. Think penicillin, not what's growing in the back of your fridge because you forgot about the roast.
Yeah, and actually it is penicillin.
Yes, it is a form of penicillin.
Yeah, and a lot of the cheeses it actually is.
No, people who have penicillin allergies, should they be worried?
No.
No?
Different strain. It's a different strain.
Okay.
As
far as you know.
As far as I know, it's like
cautious. Ask your doctor.
Always consult your doctor, and if they tell you not to do it, don't listen to us.
Yes, we are not professionals. We are amateurs and reckless.
But I think it's like if it's fried in peanut oil, people can still eat it because
it doesn't contain that part that makes you have the allergic reaction. So okay.
Exactly. I'm pretty sure. So
now, to me, the texture and feel of blue cheese, that kind of smeary feel you get, it really feels the same as Wensley dough.
And there are actually blue Wensley dough.
Okay.
So it's kind of the same. That's the type of cheese, and then the mold is just like an adjunct to it. You know how some other cheeses, like Havarti's, they'll have different adjuncts.
Herbs and spices.
Like herbs, spices, nuts, fruits, things like that mixed in with it.
And just because cheeses have those extra things mixed in, it doesn't mean they're trying to pull a fast one and cover up imperfections in the cheese. It's there to add another flavor for you to experience.
Exactly.
They're not trying to fool you. So don't be afraid to try them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, practically speaking, if we want to look at it from historical point of view, because we're big history buffs, probably inoculating these cheeses with an edible type of mold.
Preservation.
Preserves it, exactly. So all the base belongs to the good mold. And the bad mold isn't in there killing their dudes.
So pretty much these cheeses that are inoculated with the mold, they have the cheat code. So nobody can kill their dudes. They're cheating.
They're like the kid on the block with the game genie.
Yes.
Or the Game Shark.
Yes. I like blue cheese to a point. I've never been really fond of blue cheese dressing. Sheila could bathe in it.
I could drink it.
I find that the fresher blue cheese, or the real blue cheese, not the dressing, is really good. And it has its place, depending on what you're doing. To sit down and eat a hunk of it, I probably can't do that. Sheila can.
Well, if you were sitting there at a party and there was the funky blue plate, which actually I might put together at some time.
Oh, God.
With, you know, the walnuts and the dates and everything.
I would sample it.
Yeah.
I would try it, but I wouldn't sit down and mow down on it. Whereas the Wensleydale with the cranberries in it, or what was the one with the blueberries? Was that a Wensleydale too?
It was actually a White Stilton, I think.
White Stilton. Oh. My cousin's wedding, they had a... It was a killer swanky wedding, and they had a cheese hors d'oeuvre area before you went in for the reception. It was killer, and they had this amazing cheese area, and they had this blueberry Stilton out that I just wanted to roll in like a dog so I could smell like it, so I could surprise people, because nobody expects blueberry Stilton to sneak up on them. It was that good.
Right. Well, and that was the first time we ever tried
exactly.
it, and then after we tried it, it was like in the stores everywhere.
It was weird.
It's like we actually were like on the crest of a trend, or it
yes.
actually happened or something. It was really strange.
If your cheese counter in your local store has it, and you like a sweeter cheese, almost like a dessert cheese, totally go for it, because it's amazing. It's
yeah.
expensive.
Well, the Stilton is really tangy,
mm-hmm.
and then you have
the sweetness
sweet
blueberry,
of
yes.
the blueberries. Yeah.
It's like cheesecake without being cake. You wouldn't eat it with a fork. You spread it on something, but it's completely worth it.
Yeah.
So good. And then the cranberry Wensleydale is
yeah.
similar to that. It's a little
Same
tangier,
deal.
Yes.
But it's the tangier side, definitely.
And if you're in Canada, the President's Choice goat cheese with the cranberries, really good
It's
stuff.
Like cranberries and cinnamon.
Yes.
And it's really good.
It's killer.
It's spreadable. Get yourself a sleeve of nice wheat crackers.
Mm-hmm. Or a nice baguette.
Yeah.
Whole wheat baguette, slice it thin, and go to town on it. If you have to go to a potluck or a party and you don't have time to cook, swing by the store and pick up some of that, because it will go. It's totally worth it.
Yeah. It's a total crowd pleaser.
Yes. So we've covered almost everything, but our favorite cheeses. Well, we've kind of covered them. So if you could only eat two cheeses, I know I can't say one because it would break your heart.
Oh,
if you could only eat two cheeses for the rest of your life, what would you pick?
Cheddar would definitely have to be one of them. I could not live without cheddar. I like it old. I like it sharp. It doesn't matter if it's the white cheddar without the orange dye in it. Yes, the orange is not natural. It's
have
added
you ever seen a cow milk orange? No, you haven't.
No. Exactly. They add it just for aesthetics, I guess. I don't care if it's white or orange, as long as it's old and sharp. For the second one,
Remember, this is for everything, even cooking.
See, I'm so torn between the blue cheese and the brie, because I love both. I'd probably have to take brie.
Uh-huh.
It would be really hard, though, because I really like blue cheese.
See, I love brie.
Would brie be your number one?
No, I don't think it would be, because the only time I eat brie is to eat brie. I don't cook with it. Whereas with cheddar, I cook with it, I eat it, I use it all the time. So I have to say my number one is still cheddar, but it has to be a good cheddar.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Like a nice aged cheddar.
A nice aged cheddar. And my number two is actually going to be, this is going to shock you, Swiss.
Yeah,
because
I can't
do cheese fondue without Swiss and cheddar. You can, but it's not going to be how I want it. And you can also substitute... You can eat Swiss just as a chunk, and you can also substitute it, if you're careful, with a younger Swiss for mozzarella.
Yeah, that's true.
So I could still do pizzas and things. So I would actually be boring if I only could have two cheeses and say Swiss and cheddar. Now, if you said three cheeses, or if I said three cheeses, then brie would totally be not my number three. Though for just eating, not cooking, I could cook with any cheese, but just to have plain and eating.
Just for
my number one would probably be Wensleydale, and my number two would be brie. I love the Wensleydale with cranberries.
She's like shaking with anticipation.
Oh, I love it. It's so good.
Cheese.
Wensleydale.
What's wrong with Wensleydale?
We've been quoting from Wallace and Gromit. Because Wallace has a thing with cheese. And if you've never seen Wallace and Gromit, any of the episodes, or the Curse of the Were-Rabbit movie, stop the podcast and go watch them. Go rent them, go borrow them, Netflix it, whatever. They're the best claymation ever.
Yeah.
Possible.
It's like the new standard for claymation, I think.
And it's timeless.
Yeah.
You know, Wallace and Gromit have been around since the early 90s, and it still was just as good as it was then, so...
And it's for all ages, really.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we also forgot to mention for pairing, don't neglect ciders.
Oh, yes.
To go with your cheeses.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to do, like, an Irish cheddar plate, drool, 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 some nice Magners cider would be nice.
Mm-hmm. go with some cider. Go with
or something local. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't have to be an imported cider.
Well, it's a nice middle of the road to go with cheese because it's tangy, but it's sweet too. So you have something that'll go with both palates of the stronger cheeses and the softer, milder cheeses.
Yeah.
And you can make your own cheese, and don't be afraid to do so.
Yeah.
That was something we talked a little bit about in Good Fair and Cheerbold England.
Yeah.
Because she had a chapter on cheese that we waxed philosophic about because we love cheese, but she put in the end that she wasn't going to do any recipes for it because nobody really makes cheese anymore. And this gets a little bit into the history of cheese.
Yeah.
Cheese, historically speaking, came out of kind of the Middle Eastern area.
Right. Well, I mean, it was probably something that was developed simultaneously throughout a number of communities. But if you're looking at the oldest civilizations, where it probably started first...
It well, most likely started there because of the environment, the climate you need to cause the culture to start with the rennet and the milk. And we know that certain tribes in that area carried milk in...
Like calfskin stomachs.
In stomachs. And that's what's the key part, is it needs to be in a stomach, because rennet occurs naturally in animal stomachs, and that's what makes the cheese curd really form. So at some point, somebody was probably crossing the desert or crossing a mountain or whatever with milk in the stomach, and it curdled. It became curds, curdled curds.
Yeah.
And he tasted it and said, hey, this is pretty good.
And then they caught on. This is way more stable than milk is.
Exactly. They caught on to, hey, this can be preserved and prolonged, and we can have this instead of having to chug all the milk before it goes bad.
Exactly.
Which is what farmers would do, is the leftover milk they didn't sell, they'd go into the cheese making thing and they'd make cheese out of it. So at the end of the season, they still had a dairy product left and they didn't just have to toss out all the unsold milk.
It carries well over the winter too.
Exactly.
I mean, it's fairly shelf stable. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't have any refrigeration, if you have like a root cellar, you can keep cheeses in there. And especially because they'll cover it in wax, or they'll have it wrapped in cloth. One of the things when I was reading about the history of cheese is it's no mistake or no sort of coincidence that a lot of the monasteries in both France and in Quebec are famous for their cheeses, because it was known as like the other white meat whenever people had to fast for fast days or for Lent, when you had to give up meat.
But you could still eat cheese because it's vegetarian, not vegan. But back to the rennet. Right. This is important. Before really industrialized society, if you wanted to make cheese, you had to have rennet, which you had to get from an animal product. So not all cheese is vegetarian unless it's been made with an animal, an artificial rennet. They do have those now. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you'd pointed out to me earlier is people who are keeping kosher, they know what they're doing. They don't need us to say, hey, watch out for the cheese. But if you keep kosher, you're looking for kosher cheese, because the rennet has, if it's natural rennet, it has to come from an animal that was slaughtered under those guidelines, which I didn't even think of before.
Right. Well, and some people are not actually religiously bound by it, but they buy things that are kosher and halal anyway, because they are generally better quality than what's out there. And that's just a nice little interesting side fact.
It's less industrialized, the process, so a lot of people feel safer with that. But if you keep vegetarian, and you didn't realize that before, I'm sorry to rain on your parade, but you might want to look into that if it's that important. If you're doing it as a political statement and not out of I just don't like meat.
Right, out of a dietary thing.
Yeah.
It depends if you're lacto-ovo or...
Yeah.
Or what?
Yes.
I mean,
if you're not lacto-ovo, if you're vegan, you're not going to eat cheese.
Yeah, there's no vegan cheese.
Yeah, you're going to... Well, there is. It's called soy product.
Oh, true.
Which
that.
Was the one thing, I was looking over your shoulder while you were browsing the internet.
Cheese?
The Chinese cheese is different tofus and bean curds that have been aged and cultured to where they almost taste like cheese anyway.
Which is kind of cool, actually.
Which is kind of neat, but I like cheese. So, anyway, back to the rennet. So that's something you can get artificially now.
Yeah, they have vegetable-based rennets that they use.
But at the time of when she wrote A Good Fair and Cheer of England, I don't know how easy it was to get rennet. She mentioned that you sometimes can get it in the grocery store, but not really, which is one of the reasons she left it out.
Right.
Now that there's a hobbyist movement going on with cheesemaking,
you
can order it anywhere online.
Yeah, it's smaller than the craft brew and home brewing thing, but it's still there. It's kind of underground right now. But.
One of the biggest stumbling blocks is the lack of access to raw milk. Because raw milk is supposed to make the best cheese. We wouldn't know because we have no access to it. We've been told, we have read, that raw milk makes great cheese, but there's a little bit of paranoia. Again, we covered in Last Chance to Eat, some of the funky funguses and bacteria can get into raw milk and still live in the cheese for younger cheeses. For a raw milk cheese to come into the United States, it has to be aged past a certain point when they know the bacteria dies. and then it loses some of the freshness and the flavor.
So you might as well just eat the regular pasteurized cheese.
Mm-hmm. But a fun thing to do with your kids, if you don't have access to raw milk, is you can still make cheese. Cream. There are recipes using cream and salt and, what was the other thing?
It's like lemon juice.
And you can make ricotta with that.
Right.
That you can make feta. You can make all kinds of neat cheese products at home. Quick cheeses, the young cheeses.
Yeah.
That are the scoopable cheeses, we would call those, with your family. And the one place on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
Yeah, they made their fresh ricotta every day.
Every day. And it's supposed to make a difference. I'd like to try it next time we do lasagna, maybe. Get all ambitious and make some ricotta, fresh ricotta to spread on there.
That would be awesome.
Yes.
Can you imagine cannolis made with that? I wonder if we could make mascarpone at home.
Well, you're supposed to, apparently, use mascarpone when you make cannolis. Mascarpone is a sweet Italian cheese.
Right.
It is also hideously expensive. You're looking at, like, $8 for 4 ounces.
Which is why most places use ricotta.
You can blend ricotta till it's smooth with sugar and make a very similar cheese to mascarpone. If you're a hardcore Italian culinary person, you're going to be able to tell the difference. If you're me, who didn't have a cannoli till she was like 25, you're not going to be able to tell the difference. So, but that would be awesome. Blend it up, make it nice and smooth, make some cannolis. I have.
Because the shell is only just like fried and then shaped and then
You can buy the shells pre-made.
Oh.
In grocery stores. I've seen them in the baking aisles and sometimes the cookie aisles.
Well, all right then. We have a little project for ourselves then.
Project. Interesting. So, look into the future. Probably going to do some media reviews soon. We went to the bookstore today, and I decided I'm, like, blowing a lot of cash next week on some cool-looking books that we want to do reviews on because they look awesome. We've also noticed that our numbers for downloads seem higher on the things that are more media reviews. And we know we don't have many listeners who are local, but we have listeners who are out of Canada or out of the area. So we're going to try to make sure we keep it pretty even between restaurant reviews for people who are local and listening, and people who aren't, but still like what we're saying, so you can hear our opinions about some of the other things that are out there, like books, cookbooks, various food groups, that sort of thing.
And we still have to let our history all hang out and do the Society for Creative Anachronism episode.
Yes, I have to get on the tech for that and get the Skype set up so we can record with Jen. I feel bad.
A special, super awesome guest.
Yes, it's going to be exciting.
I am excited.
I'm excited.
So watch for more media reviews, an SCA primer for
noobs,
and
there's no shame in being a noob.
Yeah, historical food.
Unless you're cheese fungus, then all your bases belong to those dudes, and the cheese will poison you. So
yeah, and they're killing your dudes.
Anyway, anything else you want to add?
I don't think so.
Is there anything we didn't cover that we wanted to cover on cheese? Baking with it, actually. Should probably toss this little factoid out. You can bake all kinds of crazy recipes with cheeses. Try to find a recipe that corresponds with it. But remember that harder and older cheeses mean they have less moisture in them.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do like a bread, you might want to go with a harder cheese because it's not going to throw off your moisture content of your bread. If you want to bake with a softer cheese, you might want to consider how much moisture you're adding to your recipe because it might throw things off and make it too oozy.
Exactly. A great example of that was I made my famous chicken cordon bleu, and instead of using Swiss, I used Brie, but I didn't cut any of the rind off, so it was a little bit too much for me.
And it was kind of oozy, but it was so good.
It was super oozy, so if I would have actually de-rinded it, then...
Or if we'd gotten an older Brie that wasn't as oozy, too, that might have worked pretty well.
A younger Brie.
A younger Brie.
Because the older it is, the more oozier
it
gets.
You're right. So just keep that in mind, but if you're doing, like, a bread, you might want to go with a Parmesan or Asiago in it instead of ricotta. Because ricotta just probably won't work well with it. So,
that's not a good
idea. Those are the only real guidelines you need. If you worry about whether or not you can make a cheese substitution in your recipe, go online and look it up. There are lots of guidelines out there. I've seen them in cookbooks as well to give you ideas as to how you can substitute certain cheeses.
Exactly. I mean, if you're making something that calls for Parmesan Reggiano, you can totally substitute Asiago.
Yes.
It's the same texture.
It's
the same moisture content.
Italian cheese will work for it, really.
Exactly.
As long as it's not like a hard, some weird hybrid of like Parmesan and blue cheese. Because you have to keep the flavor note in mind, too.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be weird. Though you'd like it.
But blue cheese crumbles on top might be good. And then blue cheese on the side.
And then stuffed inside.
And then stuffed inside.
This is Tracy.
And this is Sheila, and we are Zwei Fat Chicks. Thanks for listening.
We hope you enjoyed the Zwei Fat Chicks podcast. Please add us as a friend on MySpace and or Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter. Please email your comments, questions, or suggestions to zweifatchicks@gmail.com. That's zweifatchicks@gmail.com. Our theme music is Hot Swing by Kevin MacLeod. Our podcasts, like Mr. MacLeod's music, are protected under a Creative Commons attribute copyright. You can make copies of our shows and share them with friends, but please make sure that credit is given. Once again, thank you for tuning in, and we hope you have a great day.